from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here, now. Your anchor, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Coming to you live from the nation's capital, this is America's Radio News. This is where you come to get informed. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us. It's Thursday, February 24th. Here's what's happening.
Well, I'm not saying it's just about collective bargaining, Ed, because even in states, as you point out, where collective bargaining doesn't exist, legislatures have been too generous to public employees over time.
The spreading union standoff. Both sides say it's a fight over fairness.
It's hard to imagine there's a person who can kill his own people or bombard them. That's really ugly.
Iran's president maxing out the hypocrisy meter.
One of the things about me is I treat everybody the same. I don't care that you're Lindsay Lohan versus John Doe, Jane Doe. That doesn't affect me.
An L.A. judge tells Lindsay Lohan her celebrity status means nothing in his courtroom.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
And Lori London, looking at the price of oil right now, it looks like Libya is the driver of the economy, at least as far as crude is concerned. Check this out. $119 per barrel in frantic trading right now, according to the Financial Times. Absolutely amazing.
This is getting ugly. Well, army units and militiamen loyal to Muammar Gaddafi have struck back against rebellious Libyans who've been rising up in cities close to the capital, attacking a mosque where many people were holding an anti-government sit-in, battling with others who'd seized control of an airport. Meanwhile, Gaddafi now accusing al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden of being behind the uprising in Libya. That he said in a rambling phone call on state TV.
Toyota is recalling 2.17 million vehicles here in the United States. This breaking this morning. Toyota Motor Corporation recalled those vehicles in the United States today to address accelerator pedals that could become entrapped in the floor mats or jammed in the driver's side carpeting, prompting federal regulators to close its investigation in the embattled Japanese automaker. Automaker has said it would add three models to the 2009 pedal entrapment recall. That's the 4Runner SUVs from 2003 to 2009, the RAV4 compact SUVs from 2006 to 2010, and the Lexus LX 5700s from the year 2008 to 2011.
Well, Wisconsin Democrats in the state assembly potentially agreed to a deal in the pre-dawn hours this morning to limit debate and vote, to reach a vote, and perhaps by midday on a bill taking away public workers' collective bargaining rights. Republican leadership in the Senate, meanwhile, dispatched police officers to the homes of some of the 14 Democratic lawmakers who've been on the run for a week to avoid voting on the proposal to compel them to return.
Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker answered questions from reporters yesterday after receiving a prank phone call.
Action from the reality is that we have a job to do here, and the job is to debate this bill. And you're only able to debate it if you're in the Capitol focused on what's at hand. Make your case, make your argument, but in the end, you can't make that by fleeing to some other state. Patrick, you had a question? I heard Patrick. What's that? I didn't. I absolutely didn't put that.
No.
We thought, what I said is, the question was asked, we thought about in terms of there's all sorts of options out there. I think you've not only seen in our actions, but you heard in my comment on that tape that I dismissed that.
Yeah, I think the governor may have gotten himself in a little bit of hot water there in that admission. You know, he thought about it, but it never really came to fruition. I'm not sure how that's going to play out there in Wisconsin.
And these Koch brothers, we might add, they were the second biggest financial campaign contributors to the governor when he was running for governor. And apparently he thought the phone call was one of those guys.
And under his proposed budget, isn't there some kind of a line in there that basically says that the deals with non-compete contracts out there, and that these guys, that some people are alleging, mostly from the union side and from the liberal left, that these Koch brothers,
yes,
would actually be the recipient,
well,
of no-bid contracts?
Buried in the Walker budget, 10 lines unrelated to employee takeaways or union rights, allowing the state to sell or contract with a private corporation, own heating, cooling, power plants without solicitation of bids. And these guys, yeah, are big energy guys in the state.
There's nothing conservative, at least by their own definition, about no-bid contracts. I wonder what that's all about.
Well, the guy at the Buffalo Beast, his name is Ian Murphy. He is the prank caller who got through to the Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker with, as he describes it, some pretty ineffective security procedures.
I did make the chief of staff did ask for my number so they could call me back.
But seeing as I was using Skype, that was impossible. So I made up this story on the spot about my maid, Maria, who had accidentally washed my phone. And so now I was calling from the void, I said. I was using the void and the snipe. And amazingly, he just said, sure, that sounds totally believable. And so he gave me the time to call back, and I called back later and got right to the governor.
Now, state Democrats are claiming that they have tried to call the governor and cannot get through.
Right.
They are saying he will not take their call. So Democrats are coming into question saying, why is he taking this big donor's call, this billionaire's, and not ours?
Well, the governor said publicly, too, he didn't want to talk anymore. He's not going to negotiate on this. He believes this is the way the state needs to go. He wants to put the onus on trimming back some of these benefits and salaries for the public employees and give the taxpayers a break for a change. Continuing on with this whole theme here, former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, he says that the AWOL Wisconsin Democrats who fled the state need to be removed from office.
I think at a minimum, the recall effort should go forward and get those public officials recalled for abandoning their responsibilities and their posts. The notion that they're, quote unquote, doing their job by not doing their job is preposterous. It's Alice in Wonderland. It's through the looking glass. It makes no sense at all. And when you raise your right hand and you look the people of Wisconsin or the country in the eye and say that you're going to uphold the Constitution and uphold your duties, and then the first time you have something that isn't going to go your way, you skedaddle like a little ninny out of the state, it is a dereliction of duty and they should be removed from office. It's preposterous.
Yeah, Lori, in that prank phone call, too, the governor made reference to those folks that are under pressure for recalls from their own constituents that sent them to the state house. I don't think that it's playing out well on the ground out there in Wisconsin to have Democrats fleeing instead of standing up to Republicans in the legislature where their constituents now believe they belong.
Right. And, of course, on the other side of that, the Democrats are saying they're taking a stand for what they believe is right.
Coming up on America's Radio News, Ashish Sen, that's really, say that three times fast, the foreign desk reporter for the Washington Times coming in to talk about what's happening overseas, in particular in Libya.
And Julian Assange can be extradited to Sweden in the sex crimes inquiry. That's another tongue twister.
There you go. And President Barack Obama's stimulus bill, the cost is actually going up according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. We'll tell you by how much when America's Radio News continues. This is where the nation's news breaks.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If we break the story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
Coming to you live from the nation's capital, we are very happy that you're sitting right where you are listening to us. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, a Saudi Arabian citizen suspected of planning a terrorist attack using explosive chemicals has been arrested by the FBI. Khalid Al-Dazari, a 20-year-old college student near Lubbock, Texas, allegedly targeted the Dallas home of former President George W. Bush.
Wow.
He was arrested late yesterday, Tuesday, on a federal charge of attempted use of weapons of mass destruction.
The CBO says stimulus actually cost us more than originally thought. Congress's chief scorekeeper has again raised the cost estimate of President Barack Obama's two-year-old economic stimulus program, calculating it will end up costing taxpayers $820 billion or $34 billion more than originally projected.
Well, Space Shuttle Discovery poised to make its last flight at 4:50 p.m. Eastern today. NASA's confident no hydrogen gas will leak and no cracks will develop in the fuel tank. Both problems cropped up during the initial countdown in November. Discovery heads to the International Space Station with a crew of six, as well as a load of supplies and a humanoid robot.
Let's scoot on over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by there is Ashish Sen, foreign desk reporter for the Washington Times. Mr. Shannon, welcome to America's Radio News.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
You betcha, you betcha. I want to talk to you about what's happening over in the Middle East right now. This is your area of expertise, and man alive, it is coming to a head in a lot of those former dictatorship states, in particular Libya. It's very odd. Muammar Gaddafi coming out and saying that President Obama is his friend. He's also saying that the uprisings in his country are being basically fueled by Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda coming out and saying that they support the protesters. What does all of this mean?
Well, you know, people in Libya who I've been speaking with over the past 24 hours said that when they heard Muammar Gaddafi blame these protests on Osama bin Laden, their immediate reaction was to laugh because they said that they have seen absolutely no sign of any kind of militant element in the protests, and these are a peaceful pro-democracy uprising.
So that brings me to the question, how optimistic should we be that Libya could actually become a democratic society, given the fact that, you know, we go from Gaddafi to what? There doesn't seem to be any organized leadership of any kind as far as in this democracy movement. It just seems like pure chaos.
You're quite right there to mention that, because even among Libyans themselves, they are they're all very anxious about what comes next. Everyone says that's a big question on their minds, but what they're happy about is that they will probably no longer have a dictatorship. The Gaddafi regime has crushed any kind of political democracy process in the country. There are no political parties. He's kept the army in check, so there's not a strong army either. So unlike in Egypt, so there's a big question mark over the future of, in Libya post-Gaddafi.
And, sir, is there anything the U.S. can do? It doesn't seem like we really would have that much leverage in controlling their destiny.
No, the U.S. has actually very limited options in Libya, largely because it hasn't had any relations with the country for a long, long time, as you know. Mm-hmm. Unlike in Egypt, where they built long relationships with the Mubarak regime, those kind of ties don't exist with the Gaddafi regime.
We're talking with Ashish Sen, foreign desk reporter for The Washington Times. And, sir, I wanted to ask you about I know you're in contact with folks on the ground over in Libya, so I wanted to know how we here in the United States, in particular our president, how we are viewed from the folks on the ground over there. Do they want our help? Do they think they need our help? Or do they want us to remain out of it? I mean, what are the people telling you?
People on the ground have been slightly disappointed by the U.S. and Western response. They want a clear message from this administration in Washington, administrations in London and Paris, to tell Gaddafi that his time is up and that he should go. They haven't heard that. The president spoke yesterday, but there was no mention of Colonel Gaddafi, which has been a disappointment to the people in Libya.
And the movements on the ground right now, the last statistic I show that the opposition controls some of the major cities in country. And in fact, the only thing I really have noticed that Mr. Gaddafi is remaining control of is Tripoli, the capital. Is that what you're hearing, or does he have a loose grip on the capital as well?
The way the control seems to be divided right now is east and west. A large chunk of the east part of the country is under the control of the opposition. There have been heavy battles today in cities outside Tripoli, which is on the west, and because the Gaddafi regime is trying to consolidate its grip there. But it seems to be loosening on the west. Tripoli is firmly in its control, and people are too intimidated and scared by the use of violence to even come out in the streets today.
All right. He is Ashish Sen, the foreign desk reporter for The Washington Times. Thanks a lot, sir, for coming on America's Radio News.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
You betcha. Hey, I'm going to call an audible right now from my producer out there. I'm going to play a little bit of a soundbite here from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. How is this for irony? Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is now condemning Libya for using violence against the protesters.
It's hard to imagine there's a person who can kill his own people or bombard them. That's really ugly. I advise strongly that everyone should allow their people to talk and reply to their demands. They lead these people. How can a ruler bombard his own people and then say, if anyone speaks out, I'll kill them? This is not acceptable. People should have freedom and decision-making powers in their own future. This is their right. I think everyone in the world is very shocked at what's happening in Libya. It's really bad. I think they should heed the demands of their people. But of course, as we know, anyone who doesn't respect the will of their people, well, their fate is written.
Unbelievable.
Pot? Hello, kettle. My goodness, that was the leader of Iran, Mahmoud, the president, I'm sorry, of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
Was his own government just last week not shouting, kill the opposition, execute.
Absolutely. America's radio news continues. Coming up next, it looks like Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's own government, not the only one clamping down on protesters. We'll tell you what the Chinese are up to.
And Egyptian authorities arresting the country's former information minister and a host of others.
And Representative Marsha Blackburn, Republican congressman who sits on the Committee for Energy and Commerce, coming up next right here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News. Give you what you want. Ignore what you don't. This is America's Radio News.
We're looking at 34 minutes past the top of the hour, coming to you live from the nation's capital. This is America's Radio News. This is where the nation comes to get informed. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It's Thursday, February 24th. Here's what's happening.
Well, I'm not saying it's just about collective bargaining, Ann, because even in states, as you point out, where collective bargaining doesn't exist, legislatures have been too generous to public employees over time.
The spreading union standoff. Both sides say it's a fight over fairness.
It's hard to imagine there's a person who can kill his own people or bombard them. That's really ugly.
Iran's president maxing out the hypocrisy meter.
One of the things about me is I treat everybody the same. I don't care that you're Lindsay Lohan versus John Doe, Jane Doe. That doesn't affect me.
An L.A. judge tells Lindsay Lohan her celebrity status means nothing in his courtroom.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
And welcome to America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board here in the nation's capital on the downhill slide toward a weekend. And boy, a really tumultuous week to cover in news, Lori London.
Absolutely. Lots going on here and abroad. Of course, in Libya, army units and militiamen loyal to Muammar Gaddafi struck back against rebellious Libyans who've risen up in cities close to the capital today, attacking a mosque where many were holding an anti-government sit-in, battling with others who seized control of an airport. Gaddafi, meanwhile, accusing al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden of being behind the uprising in Libya. This in a rambling phone call to state TV.
China will not succumb to the kind of unrest rocking authoritarian governments across the Middle East. That's according to a senior official. Through a rash of detentions and censorship suggests Beijing remains pretty nervous, though. The comments of Zhao Zhezing, former head of the government's information office, where Beijing's most senior public response so far to online message urging Jasmine's revolution protests. And so far, those protests in China have been small and overwhelmed by swarms of police.
Well, Wisconsin Democrats in the state assembly agreed to a deal in the pre-dawn hours this morning to limit debate and reach a vote, perhaps today by midday, on a bill taking away public workers' collective bargaining rights. The Republican leadership in the Senate, meanwhile, dispatched police officers to the homes of some 14 Democratic lawmakers who've been on the run for a week to avoid voting on the proposal.
Let's get on over to America's Radio News line. They're waiting for us. Representative Marsha Blackburn. She's a Republican congresswoman who sits on the Committee on Energy and Commerce. And Congresswoman Blackburn, welcome to America's Radio News.
Thank you so much. Good to be with you.
Welcome.
Before we get into what you do on the committee there, I wanted to ask you, this came out yesterday, of course, the Obama administration deciding it would no longer defend the Defense of Marriage Act. This was an act put in place by a Republican Congress and signed into law by William Jefferson Clinton. Wanted to get your reaction to what the president did yesterday.
Well, I find it so interesting that the president is trying to pick and choose what he is planning to enforce. And, of course, that causes us concern, just like it causes so many Americans concern. I'm looking forward to the actions that we're going to take. I've talked with some of my colleagues, and I think when we go back next week, you'll see us take some actions on this decision.
And Representative, I wanted to see if you thought this, too. There are some folks in some circles speculating that maybe the president maybe opened himself up a little bit on this issue because he decides that there's a law that was passed by another Congress and another president that he himself declared to be unconstitutional and doesn't think that his department, his administration should defend this law. But does he lose the moral authority then to insist that states adhere to his law that he just passed, the Obamacare legislation?
Well, you know, that's a great question to ask, and it is one of those that has people kind of scratching their heads right now. He can't pick and choose what law he wants to enforce and what he wants to ignore. And it's a little bit of a head-scratcher, I think, to many Americans who are watching this and saying, now, wait a minute. We abide by the rule of law in this country, and we do so for a reason. So, you know, it makes a prickly path forward for him.
Now, Congresswoman Blackburn, you gave an impassioned speech at CPAC about the president's new FCC regulations of the Internet or net neutrality rules. Can you elaborate on that a little bit and your position on that?
Certainly. I'll be happy to. Basically, net neutrality would be the fairness doctrine for the Internet. It would be the federal government stepping in and saying, we're going to assign priority and value to all content that travels over the broadband pipe, and if you're an innovator and you're developing new applications and usage for that broadband pipe, you've got to seek permission from the FCC. This is what they did. After the 111th Congress adjourned on Christmas week, on December 24th, the FCC assembled, and by a 3-2 vote, there are three Democrat commissioners and two Republican commissioners. So by a 3-2 vote, they voted to implement net neutrality rules, which would thereby put them, the FCC, an unelected federal agency in charge of the Internet. So what we are doing is raising public awareness and developing a legislative plan and a way to move forward to block them from these rules. Last week, when we had our vote on the continuing resolution, we blocked the funding that the FCC could use to implement these rules. We also, last week, put into place, started the time clock on the Congressional Review Act so we can pass a resolution of disapproval that would stay or halt the action that they could take in implementing these rules.
And how do you respond to your critics who say, unless you regulate the Internet, companies, we'll have two companies, one for the haves and one for the have-nots?
Well, what you do is look at the history of the Internet. There has been no market failure. And there, everybody, when you look at the access to the Internet, to broadband, 95% of the country has access to broadband, and over 90% of those that have access to the Internet are pleased with the service that they have. And that is a survey that was done by the Democrat-led FCC. So we know that there has not been a market failure, and there has been no reason for the federal government to step over and take control of the Internet. Indeed, this is a federal agency going where they have no authority to go, and it is imperative that we rein them back in.
Our guest is Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, a Republican congresswoman who sits on the Committee on Energy and Commerce. And Congresswoman, I wanted to ask you here, we got about 45 seconds left, very quickly. There's been some criticism from conservative circles that the Republicans are not going far enough in their budget cutting. How do you respond to that?
Well, I remind people this is our first bite at the apple with a continuing resolution. We're going to have that first snippet. That was the vote we had last week with the $60 billion. Indeed, I would have liked to have cut more, had an amendment that would have cut another $22 billion. Watch for what we do with the debt limit vote and the additional cuts that will be made there, and then the big chunk will come when we do the budget.
She is Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, Republican congresswoman who sits on the Committee on Energy and Commerce. Congresswoman, thanks a lot for coming on America's Radio News. Hope to have you back again soon.
Appreciate you. Good to be with you. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye. Coming up next on America's Radio News, Indiana lawmakers, they pass immigration curbs just like Arizona. Wait till you hear that story.
And Gaddafi supporters launch new attacks to crush the rebellion.
And Justin Bieber, he has more good news in his life. We'll talk about that coming up next, right here on America's Radio News. It's where the nation's news breaks.
Breaking news. And the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
Fast, reliable, and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
The markets are taking a beating. Crude oil is skyrocketing, $119 right now, according to the Financial Times, and frantic trading, all because of what's happening over in Libya. We have our eyes on it for sure here at America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, we do have a little bit of better economic news. Fewer people requested unemployment benefits last week, pushing the four-week average of applications to its lowest level in more than 2.5 years. Labor Department says the number of laid-off workers applying for unemployment benefits dropped by 22,000 last week to a seasonably adjusted rate of 391,000. It was a third drop in the past 4 weeks.
Seems the Indiana legislature has been pretty busy lately. The Senate just passed a sweeping immigration bill that echoes Arizona's tougher measures on illegal immigrants. And that's despite opposition from some of the largest employers and business groups in that state. The measure passed on Tuesday night by a vote of 31-18, and it would allow the state and local police to ask a person stop for infractions like traffic violations or proof of legal residency if the officer has a reasonable suspicion they may be in the country illegally.
Chris, get this. Julian Assange can be extradited to Sweden in a sex crimes inquiry. A British judge ruled that he rejected claims by WikiLeaks founder that he would not face a fair trial there. Assange's lawyer said he will appeal. Judge Howard Riddle said the allegations of rape and sexual molestation by two women against Assange do meet the definition of extraditable offenses, and said the Swedish warrant had been properly issued and is valid.
Changing gears back here at home, it's good to be Justin Bieber, isn't it? I mean, Bieber fever is sweeping the nation.
Bieber fever.
Yeah, and check this out. Justin Bieber notched his second number one album on the United States pop chart yesterday as a remix set tied in with the 3D concert movie claimed the highest tally for a top album since Christmas week. The first full week of post-Grammy sales also boosted albums by key winners and performers such as Lady Antebellum, Arcade Fire, and Esperanza Spalding.
A space shuttle Discovery poised to make its final flight into space at 4:50 p.m. Eastern. NASA says it's confident no hydrogen gas will leak, no cracks will develop. Both of those problems cropped up during the initial countdown in November. Now, Discovery heads to the International Space Station with a crew of six, along with a load of supplies and a humanoid robot.
I'm such a geek, but I am so saddened.
I know.
That this is the last shuttle flight, because we have
It's not the last shuttle flight. It's the last shuttle Discovery flight.
Oh, it is. Okay, when is our last flight? Because I know that we're supposed to
We have another one in April.
Okay, yeah, because I know that they're going to phase that out. I mean, we're very close to the end.
We are.
And
the
shuttle fleet's going to be retired, and there's nothing behind it. We have no other vehicle to take us out into the into space. It's just very sad.
Oh, don't cry.
So much of the new, or so much rather, for the new civil tone in politics. Congressman Michael Capuano, he's a Democrat from Massachusetts. He told union supporters yesterday that it's time to get bloody in the streets.
This is the final line for the fight for the middle class. But they will never, nor should they ever, nor should we ever allow them to give up the basic right to bargain for their wages and benefits. Today is a great day for all of us, but let's be serious. It's not about just one rally, not about a couple of nuts in the background who want to take it all away from you. I'm proud to be here with people who are willing to stand up. I'm proud to be here with people who understand that it's more than just sending an email that gets you going. Every once in a while, you got to get out of the streets and get a little bloody when necessary.
In the wake of the Gabrielle Giffords shooting, I think that type of rhetoric is pretty much unacceptable now in most quarters here, especially on Capitol Hill. But the congressman did come out with an immediate apology yesterday from his press office.
And, you know, an Indiana deputy attorney general lost his job yesterday after commenting online about authorities using live ammunition to run the throngs of protesters out. So it looks like on both sides of the aisle, there are some people that are stepping over the line.
Right, and Capuano did not lose his job. He did not resign as a
result.
Right,
exactly. This Indiana State Prosecutor Jeffrey Cox was fired over his remarks.
There you go.
Well, State Senator John Erpenbach of Wisconsin, one of those AWOL Wisconsin Democrats, he told Neil Cavuto of Fox News yesterday that he is not hiding, rather, but he won't disclose his location either.
Where are you?
I am in Chicago.
I know that, but where? So I can find you.
I'm in Chicago.
Okay. Are you hiding?
No, I'm not hiding. Not at all.
Okay, so you're in full view. People can find you.
I'm in Chicago. I'm talking with consultants every day. I'm answering work emails and also trying to do the best we can to try and resolve the budget impasse that we seem to be at right now.
Yeah, but is running away from the problem any way to solve the problem, Senator?
Oh, I don't think we're running away from the problem at all. If anything,
well, you're the one in Illinois, and you should be in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I understand that, Neil, but I also understand that we're standing up to the problem representing thousands of people around the state of Wisconsin who don't like the assault on their workers' rights.
Well, you know, it's a pretty funny little game going on here. Democrats say they're doing it in the name of what they believe is right, and Republicans say get back to work.
That was a pretty cute little exchange, though.
It was. So where are you?
Chicago. I'm in Chicago. That narrows it
down the road.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate that. Hey, you know what? In entertainment news, Lindsay Lohan, well, that's no big story. She's had her issues, right? And Lohan's battles with addiction and legal system become fodder for the pop culture. But celebrity addiction specialist Dr. Dupinsky is offering a more clinical view of addiction and recovery.
The reality is, you know, she has an illness. I mean, you were just a few minutes ago talking about what Martin Sheen was saying about Charlie Sheen.
Yes.
He's absolutely right that advanced addiction has a worse prognosis than the vast majority of cancers. It has a treatment. The treatment works. If I told her she had cancer, we'd be airlifting her to City of Hope for cancer treatment.
Right.
But just because it's addiction and people see that as a weakness, somehow it's her problem. We all become sort of, we all express righteous indignation and want to act out our fury on her and send her to jail. Well, the stuff she's doing is very, very typical of particularly my female patients early in recovery. They do lots of strange things. They're very fragile. And by treating her aggressively, I'm not sure you're helping her.
Well, okay. Well, I mean,
tough love, some would say tough love.
Well, I'm saying that, but I mean, this isn't her first time around this rodeo,
is it? I agree. She shouldn't, you know, necessarily be off the hook just because she's a celebrity with an addiction problem. We don't let others off the hook.
Right. And I think that maybe, you know, the first, the second, the third time, the fourth time, maybe the fifth time, you show compassion. But I mean, it's getting down the road where it's like, this is starting
to be a pattern. She's been in rehab.
Yeah, this is starting to be a pattern. So maybe some tough love is appropriate.
Well, there was a judge in L.A. that thought so. He told Lindsay Lohan Wednesday he would send her to jail point blank if she accepted a plea deal from prosecutors to avoid trial for allegedly stealing a $2,500 necklace from an upscale jewelry store. Here's a bit of what the Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Keith Schwartz tersely told Lindsay Lohan yesterday.
Ms. Lohan, I've never met you before the last court appearance. You've never met me, to my knowledge. One of the things about me is I treat everybody the same. I don't care that you're Lindsay Lohan versus John Doe, Jane Doe. That doesn't affect me. What I look to in sentencing, if there is a resolution in my court, is what are the charges, what's the prior record, things of that nature. Now, in this particular case, there has been so much speculation in the press, all of the talking head attorneys who talk about what the judge is going to do, what Ms. Hawley's going to do, what Ms. Myers is going to do. Well, I'm just going to tell you, this case does involve jail time, period. If you plead in front of me, this case is resolved in front of me, you are going to jail, period.
It's just really getting harder and harder to just be completely, not that we're not compassionate, but, you know, yeah, she has to follow the same rules as everybody else.
And I heard somebody making the comments the other day that, you know, there are some folks on Wall Street, in this current Wall Street debacle that we find ourselves in, that have done far worse. That, I mean, Bernie Madoff, he's doing time. But I mean, but there are some other folks that have been left blameless because of our financial crisis, folks in government, folks in the private sector that have actually contributed to this. And, and they're not going to jail, but we want to be really tough on Lindsay Lohan.
Well, okay. Yeah. I mean,
I'm just saying, I mean, that's out there. America's radio news continues. continues. Butch Butler, he is an economic expert and executive vice president of Laffer and Associates. He's working under the famed supply-side economist Art Laffer. We'll hear from him on The Economy.
And a Saudi citizen in Texas charged in a suspected bomb plot.
And he may not be running for president, but Chris Christie certainly seems to have a lot of advice for GOP 2012 contenders. We'll hear some of that advice coming up next, right here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. Live from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Get ready to get informed. Coming to you live from the nation's capital, this is America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It is Thursday, February 24th. Here's what's happening.
It is Governor Walker who's absolutely unreasonable and is basically taking on the posture of a dictator.
Some now comparing Wisconsin's governor to a dictator.
I want to say to Libyan men and women, those who love me and I love them, that I'm still standing here in front of this resilient house.
To a real dictator in Libya, ready to fight to the last drop of blood.
Were you being facetious when you said I was dangerous?
Well,
was that an attempt at British humor?
Let me ask you, how many of my shows have you watched?
About eight.
Oh, you have?
I haven't seen you dangerous yet.
Larry King critiques his replacement.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe to bring you all the breaking news. Some awkward moments over there at CNN. Welcome to America's Radio News, folks. We are watching the world markets right now. Oil, according to the Financial Times, spiking to $119 in frantic trading, all because of the Libyan crisis. Right, Lori Lennon?
That's right. We've got, a standoff in Wisconsin. Democrats in the state assembly have agreed to a deal in the pre-dawn hours today to limit debate and reach a vote, perhaps today by midday, on a bill taking away public workers' collective bargaining rights. Now, Republican leadership in the Senate, meanwhile, has dispatched police officers to the home of some of the 14 Democratic lawmakers who've been on the run for a week to avoid voting on the proposal.
From the streets of Madison, Wisconsin, we head overseas now. Al-Qaeda backing the Libyan protesters. This was an amazing headline to read. Al-Qaeda's North African wing condemned Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi and expressed solidarity with protesters revolting against his rule. Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb accused Gaddafi of hiring African mercenaries and ordering aircraft to fire on those protesters.
Well, Chris, Libya's embattled dictator Muammar Gaddafi gave a bizarre speech by phone today to claim the revolt was the work of Osama bin Laden, that rebellious youth had been given hallucinogens, and, get this, to complain that the Queen of England has ruled longer than him and no one's asking her to step down.
Well, I mean, aside from the fact that the Queen has had no real political power there in Great Britain for a good many years, there's some similarities in the way they dress, but that's about all.
Yeah, there's lots of similarities between Muammar Gaddafi and Queen Elizabeth, absolutely.
Back here at home and getting serious here, during a bilateral meeting with the foreign minister of Brazil, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was asked yesterday about the situation in Libya and whether sanctions are needed.
The way that we will proceed in the Security Council and in the Human Rights Council is to come up with the best approaches that we think will help the people of Libya. And remember, that must be our objective, that right now the situation is fluid, it is uncertain, it is difficult to get a clear understanding of everything that's happening everywhere throughout the country. So we are working very closely with partners. And there are many countries that have much closer relations with Libya than we do. But everything will be on the table. We will look at all the possible options to try to bring an end to the violence, to try to influence the government.
The Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, has been very forceful from the beginning of this. She was out right after the day, the first protest started out there in Libya, and she was making comments on this. So she's been pretty consistent.
Okay, well, fair enough. But it's still, we're not really sure what the U.S., how much influence the U.S. really has on making a difference in this situation. But how's this for irony, Chris? Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad now condemning Libya for using violence against protesters.
It's hard to imagine there's a person who can kill his own people or bombard them. That's really ugly. I advise strongly that everyone should allow their people to talk and reply to their demands. They lead these people. How can a ruler bombard his own people and then say, if anyone speaks out, I'll kill them? This is not acceptable. People should have freedom and decision-making powers in their own future. This is their right. I think everyone in the world is very shocked at what's happening in Libya. It's really bad. I think they should heed the demands of their people. But of course, as we know, anyone who doesn't respect the will of their people, well, their fate is written.
Unbelievable, Chris. Unbelievable. It was just last week. The parliament, the government, members of the government in Iran were raising their fists and chanting, death to the opposition. Execute the opposition.
Ahmadinejad said that
he's crazy.
That he believes the government should listen to its people and then respond. Well, yes, his response has been to arrest and kill and,
right.
and people that protest his government.
Right.
Absolutely amazing. You're right. Back here in the United States, mission managers say all systems are go for the final launch of Space Shuttle Discovery. The launch is scheduled for 4:50 in the afternoon today. It will be the final mission for Discovery. It's an 11-day mission to the International Space Station with supplies and a human-like robot. But NASA Chief Charlie Bolden told CNN yesterday that the United States didn't properly plan to have a vehicle to replace Discovery.
We didn't do the proper planning to have a vehicle in place to replace Shuttle when it lands its last landing in June. So, you know, that's what's not acceptable. But what's done is done. I'm about the future, and, you know, we're going to build something that's going to keep our astronauts safe. It's going to be within the confines of the budget provided by the Congress, and for the time being, it's going to comply with the authorization bill that the president signed after the Congress passed it.
I said this last hour, Lori London, very, very sad for me to understand that we don't have a vehicle to replace the shuttle, so our space exploration is going to be curtailed for many years down the road.
A lot of folks feeling very melancholy as this fleet retires.
You betcha. America's Radio News continues. Hello. America's Radio News continues with Butch Butler. He's an economic expert and executive vice president of Laffer Associates under the famed economic supply side economist Art Laffer. Will get a read on where the nation's economy is coming up next.
And an Indiana state prosecutor fired over his inflammatory remarks regarding Wisconsin union protesters.
And President Obama refuses to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. More on that coming up next, right here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
The campaign for 2012 has already started, and we're right in the middle of it.
Keep it set right here to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
When we turn on the light, the insects running high. This is America's Radio News.
We're looking at 20 minutes past the top of the hour. This is America's Radio News. If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, a Saudi Arabian citizen is suspected of planning a terrorist attack using explosive chemicals. He's been arrested by the FBI. Khalid al-Dawasari, a 20-year-old college student near Lubbock, Texas, allegedly targeted the Dallas home of former President George W. Bush. He was arrested late Tuesday on a federal charge of attempted use of a weapon of mass destruction.
President Obama has instructed the Justice Department to stop defending the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act, which has since 1996 banned federal recognition of same-sex unions, leaving it to the states instead. The announcement was made in a letter from Attorney General Eric Holder to congressional leaders in relations to two lawsuits, Penderson versus OPM and Windsor versus United States, which challenge a section of DOMA that defines marriage for federal purposes as only between one man and one woman. Mr. Obama has made that determination, Holder wrote, that Section 3, as applied to same-sex couples who are legally married under state law, violates the equal protection component of the Fifth Amendment. Holder wrote that the president has instructed government lawyers to no longer defend the law in those two lawsuits.
Well, Mexican soldiers have arrested an alleged Zetas drug cartel member who allegedly confessed to killing a U.S. immigration agent, but who apparently said the attack was a case of mistaken identity. Suspect Julian Zapata Espinoza told soldiers a group of gunmen from the Zetas mistook the officer's vehicle for one used by a rival gang. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent Jamie Zapata was shot to death, and fellow agent Victor Avila was wounded.
Let's get you on over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by is Butch Butler. He's an economic expert and executive vice president of Laffer and Associates, working under the famed supply-side economist Art Laffer. Mr. Butler, welcome to America's Radio News.
Thank you.
Hey, wanted to talk to you about what's happening. Of course, all eyes here in the United States on the individual states, one in particular, Wisconsin, and their budget battle, and of course, the governor's fight with the public and employee unions. Want to get your read on what states can do, because Wisconsin's not going to be the only one that have to make this battle. What states can do to balance their budgets and still keep these public employee unions happy? Was there a middle ground somewhere?
Well, I think that you are going to see a lot more of this play out over the next couple of years as states face their budget battles. And I think the most logical place for states to start, and it really is the most logical, is to look at transitioning these retirement plans from what are defined benefit to defined contribution. It's very tough.
Can you explain that defined benefit, defined contribution? Because I think a lot of folks out there, I guess it's the difference between a 401k and a pension, right?
Yeah, and essentially what you're talking about here is with a defined benefit plan, it's a promise from a company or a government to the employee in the future to provide services at a certain benefit. Whatever those services are, you will provide to them. Now, the problem with that, in theory, is that you don't really know what those services are going to cost in the future when you have that retiree. So given the escalating cost of services related to retirees, whether they're medical services or any type of retiree services, if you promise someone a defined benefit but you don't know what the cost of that benefit is going to be, it's going to be very tough to budget for that. Now, the opposite would be the defined contribution, whereby either the government or the employer or the individual contribute money to a retirement plan that is then it grows and it's saved and it can be used at the time of retirement. So
right.
If that is the most logical thing to do is to rid, and if you've seen that in corporate America significantly over the last 10 years, and it's for the same purpose, you cannot plan as a company to have defined benefits in the future and really know what that liability is going to be. So you've seen companies all across the private sector transition from defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans. And that's the most logical and easiest place to start at the local and state levels.
Right. You just made my point, because where in America these days can you find any corporation that has actually got a pension anymore? You just can't find it.
Oh, you don't. They really have phased them out. And it's been necessary for corporate America because they, just like the government, they need to plan as well, too. And if you, as I said before, if you promise someone a benefit but you don't know what it costs, you're going to have a very hard time planning for that liability.
Sir, moving to the next crisis at hand, crisis du jour, shall we say, we're seeing oil trading now at $120 a barrel because of the turmoil in the Middle East. How far do you see this going? What effect is this going to have on gas prices? It looks like it's driving them up.
Well, I think it will continue to drive up gas prices. We're also going into what is the driving season, and you'll see naturally more gas usage from automobiles as we go forward here because of the summer months. I would not be surprised to see oil continue to march higher. We saw this a couple years ago when oil topped out at about 150. Given the unrest that you're seeing around these oil-producing nations, I think you're going to continue to see oil go higher. What will it mean for the economy? I think one of two things is really going to have to happen. Either you're going to see the demand effects of rising oil put a real significant crimp on the use of that type of energy, and you'll see substitution effects away from oil into other energy types, and that may help moderate the price of oil, or you're just going to see a significant slowdown due to the fact that if oil does stay up here and we can't substitute away from it fast enough, it is going to have an impact on both the economy and profit margins.
Now, what about the impact on stocks? We've got 2 days in a row, stocks pretty much reacting to what's happening in Libya. Right now, the Dow down about 71 points. What's your take on investor fears?
Well, I think the real fear is what's happening in Libya is the short run, but what I mentioned just a second ago is the real long run fear. Let's say we have oil at sustained levels for the period of a year or so. How do companies deal with that profit hit? As oil works its way through on it as an input cost, corporate profit margins are going to suffer from it. And that, I think, is what's got the stock market a little bit rattled. You know, the stock market is clearly driven by short-term sentiment, but really in the long term, it's driven by earnings. And if you feel that earnings are going to get hit because companies can't absorb these input costs, then I think you're going to see profit margins and earnings estimates in the back half of the year prove to be a little too aggressive. And I think that's what's got the market spooked in the course of the next few quarters. In the short run, it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. We've had a significant run in the stock market, in the last couple of months that we were due for a pullback. This is the reason, but the real problem is going to be if it bleeds into corporate profit margins and we have to deal with declining earning estimates going forward.
He is Butch Butler, an economic expert and executive vice president of Laffer Associates, working under the famed supply-side economist Art Laffer. Mr. Butler, thanks a lot for appearing on America's Radio News. We'll have you back again.
Thank you.
You betcha, buddy. Coming up next, Saudi Arabia. A Saudi citizen, rather, I should say, arrested in Texas on a suspected bomb plot. We'll give you the story.
And GM posts its first full-year profit since 2004.
And Greg Murad, the director of legislation of the National Right to Work Committee. We'll get him to come in, give us his determination about what's happening in Wisconsin and neighboring states as those states' governments go head-to-head with the public employee unions. You don't want to miss this interview, ladies and gents. It's the other side of the coin. Coming up next on America's Radio News, this is where the nation's news breaks.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News. When we turn on the light, the insects run and hide. This is America's Radio News.
You can read about it tomorrow, or you can hear about it right now, right here on America's Radio News. Coming to you live from the nation's capital, I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It's Thursday, February 24th. Here's what's happening.
It is Governor Walker who's absolutely unreasonable and is basically taking on the posture of a dictator.
Some now comparing Wisconsin's governor to a dictator.
I want to say to Libyan men and women, those who love me and I love them, that I'm still standing here in front of this resilient house.
To a real dictator in Libya, ready to fight to the last drop of blood.
Were you being facetious when you said I was dangerous?
Was that
an attempt at British humor?
Let me ask you, how many of my shows have you watched?
About eight.
Oh, you have?
I haven't seen you dangerous yet.
Larry King critiques his replacement.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe to bring you all the breaking news. And across this globe, it is the conflict in Libya right now that's causing ripple effects all over the economies of the world, including hitting the United States in the category of oil. Crude breaching $119 in frantic trading, according to the Financial Times. Lori, it's hitting hard here in the United States and it's certainly over there in the Middle East.
Well, Switzerland has just frozen the assets of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. Thousands of mercenary and irregular forces have struck back at a tightening circle of rebellions around the capital, Tripoli, trying to fend off the uprising against the 40-year rule of Gaddafi, who blamed the violence on hallucinogenic drugs and Osama bin Laden.
Back here at home, a Saudi citizen in Texas charged in a suspected bomb plot. Saudi Arabian citizen suspected of planning a terrorist attack using explosive chemicals has been arrested by the FBI. Khalid Al-Dasari, a 20-year-old college student near Lubbock, Texas, allegedly targeted the Dallas home of former President George W. Bush. He was arrested late Tuesday on federal charge of attempted use of a weapon of mass destruction.
Well, the House lawmakers in Wisconsin now poised to vote today on a controversial budget repair bill that would curb public worker collective bargaining rights and raise their contributions to pensions and health insurance plans. This, according to one Democratic state representative, the vote could come down in the next few hours. The state assembly, in which Republicans hold a majority, has been debating the measure in a marathon overnight session for days.
Let's get on over to the America's Radio News line. Standing by there is Greg Murad. He's the director of legislation of the National Right to Work Committee. Mr. Murad, welcome to America's Radio News.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, sir, that recently Indiana Democrats, they fled that state, and they're trying to protest this right to work initiative that's been proposed there by the Republican controlled legislature. What is right to work legislation? What does it do for a state?
Well, right-to-work legislation basically says that nobody can be forced to join a union as a condition of employment or pay any dues to a union as a condition of employment. It's a very simple measure that just gives the individual worker the free choice as to whether or not he thinks his union deserves his support.
And I think that bears pointing out, sir, in this whole debate between what's happening in Wisconsin, what's happening with the public employee unions versus the governor, I think a lot of the folks around the country don't seem to understand that if you, in some states, if you want to go to work for your state, for your local government, you are required in some states to join a union, and not only that, you are required to pay union dues to that union.
That's correct, and Wisconsin is one of those places right now.
And critics call the right to work for less. How do you respond to those who claim the right to work states have overall lower wages for workers?
The numbers that show that don't take into account cost of living. I mean, our wage is lower in Iowa than in New York, sure, but the cost of living is a whole lot lower in Iowa than in New York. And when you do a study that actually factors in the cost of living, as a couple of noted economists have, you find that actual purchasing power is higher in right-to-work states.
And also, Governor Mitch Daniels, he does not support the right-to-work initiative in Indiana. Is this a fight Indiana should have right now, in your opinion?
It is absolutely the time for Indiana to have this fight. And Daniels' position is somewhat nuanced. He has never said that he opposes it as a matter of policy. He just wanted the legislature to focus on other issues. Had we ever gotten it to his desk, he would have signed it.
Yeah, and I think that bears pointing out, too. He just doesn't want to have the fight now.
Yeah, we're quite disappointed with him, really. I mean, this ought to be his fight, and this is an issue that is important for his state, and he knows it, and he said it.
Yeah, he's getting some pretty big backing, too. Governor Chris Christie is actually singing his praises, is probably one of the only contenders in the 2012 presidential election that could give Barack Obama a run. We'll get to that later, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about right-to-work states as opposed to non-right-to-work states. Boil down and give us some examples, if you have them, as to states that are actually a little more successful than others. How do we see their state budgets reflecting this right-to-work policy?
Well, the right-to-work states have weathered the economic storm significantly better in terms of not losing so many jobs, occasionally gaining jobs, whereas the non-right-to-work states have been hemorrhaging jobs, like Michigan. And where the economies are performing a little better because the jobs are continuing to grow there, or at least losing slower, those state budgets are in better shape.
And so there is a competitive advantage, you think, for a state to be competing with other states and other economies around the world if they have this right-to-work initiative in place?
Yeah, numerous corporate relocation firms have been quoted saying that large percentages of their customers, that is, corporations looking to relocate or expand, will not even consider the non-right-to-work states. PHH Fantas said half of their customers will not even consider a non-right-to-work state. Another one that testified at a Missouri right-to-work hearing a couple of weeks back, again, half of their customers, right-to-work is a litmus test. And for the other half, it's still a lack of a right-to-work law is still a major factor that would need to be overcome.
Greg Murad is the Director of Legislation at the National Right-to-Work Committee. And, sir, you're talking about right-to-work states faring better, but there seems to be one glaring example, one exception to this, and that's the state of California, which is a right-to-work state, and they have one of the worst budget crises in the country. How do you square that?
I square it because California is not a right-to-work state. You're misinformed there.
Really? It was my impression that they were. Maybe I'll go back and do some more homework, but maybe I'm misinformed. So you think that this type of legislation actually will actually help these states as they move forward with their budget woes?
I think so.
All right. That's our guest right now. His name is Greg Murad. He's the Director of Legislation at the National Right to Work Committee. Sir, we appreciate your perspective coming on America's Radio News.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
All right. Coming up, Wisconsin, the school district there, is warning of teacher layoffs, including Senate Majority Leader's wife. We'll give you that story.
And Gaddafi supporters launch new attacks to crush the rebellion.
And the economy is starting to teeter on oil crude prices. They're up over $120 a barrel. Those reports coming your way next on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Breaking news and the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If we break the story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
You want to get informed, you've come to the right place. This is America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It is Thursday, February 24th. Well, General Motors reporting its first full-year profit since 2004 as the automaker capped a tumultuous year that saw it emerge from bankruptcy as a dramatically smaller company with fewer employees, fewer brands, and considerably less debt thanks to a 2009 bailout by American taxpayers. Now, GM posted a $510 million profit in the fourth quarter and $4.7 billion for the year as it continues an impressive comeback from bankruptcy.
This just coming across from the Huntsford Journal, I believe. This is the source. In Wisconsin, the Huntsford School Board approving giving preliminary layoff notices to all 34 members of its teachers union, including the wife of Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, who is a Republican. The board took the action in advance of Governor Scott Walker's release of the state budget and the statutory deadline for issuing such notices to give themselves complete flexibility. Huntsford administrators had recommended issuing the notices to just five staff members.
Well, Saudi Arabia's rulers have answered the Arab world's winter rage or winter of rage with money, throwing $36 billion into housing and other social assistance channels in attempts to quell rumblings of dissent. Iran's president offering more bombast as Tehran tries to project sympathy for protesters. The two approaches this week, we only know what they are, whether they're rhetoric or capturing the style and stakes for the region's heavyweight rivals as Iran hunts for gains and Saudi Arabia tries hard to stamp out any threats.
Well, how about this for an odd juxtaposition? Movies are getting more popular and they're making more money, but everywhere except for the United States. International movie going soared in 2010. The North American market started to show more signs of trouble, according to an annual survey released on Wednesday by the Motion Picture Association of America. Total box office receipts for the films released around the world climbed to $31.8 billion. That's an 8% increase over 2009. But overseas ticket sales contributed all of that increase, as sales in North America were flat for a second year at $10.6 billion. That's odd.
Well, Congressman Dennis Kucinich, Democrat, has been spotted with the attendees at Ohio's budget protests. Kucinich says Governor Kasich is trying to take away employee rights.
This bill would basically wipe out their ability to negotiate. And for the life of me, I don't understand why Governor Kasich feels that workers should not have the right even to negotiate the terms of their labor. And that's really what the core issue is. You know, the financial issues are relevant, no question about it. But there's no reason to take away the collective bargaining rights of state employees or to interfere with collective bargaining process at county and city levels.
And, you know, this is obviously, as we've mentioned before, a very political issue, this whole thing with the unions.
Right.
It's a very on both sides of the aisle.
Well, Mr. Kucinich needs to be corrected on one thing. These initiatives are not trying to take away their rights to bargain. They're taking away their rights to bargain collectively. I mean, nobody's trying to say they can't go to their government boss and say, hey, I'd like to negotiate my salary face to face. What this does, it doesn't allow them to do so as a group.
Right. And Democrats would argue that, you know, this is pretty much gutting the foundation of the unions.
Switching from the streets of America out to the Middle East, President Obama condemned violence toward Libyan protesters, and he praised the grassroots uprising yesterday, saying that the government must face the costs of continued violations of human rights.
North and south, east and west, voices are being raised together to oppose suppression and support the rights of the Libyan people. I've also asked my administration to prepare the full range of options that we have to respond to this crisis. This includes those actions we may take and those we will coordinate with our allies and partners, or those that we'll carry out through multilateral institutions. Like all governments, the Libyan government has a responsibility to refrain from violence, to allow humanitarian assistance to reach those in need, and to respect the rights of its people.
Some odd things. The president getting criticism from some quarters here in Washington, D.C. and around the country. He didn't name Muammar Gaddafi by name. And some are speculating it's because they didn't want to set him off. You know, didn't want him to start going after Americans that happen to be in Egypt and that
right,
kind of thing.
Because they are struggling to get them out of there.
Right. But a lot of folks being critical of the president is not having a strong enough stand. Although, in stark contrast to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who has been on this from the very beginning, President Obama, in 8 days, 9 days in, was compelled to finally say something, and he's getting criticism because of that.
Correct. I would also say it's safe to assume that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton speaks on behalf of the president. Well, speaking of Libya and Muammar Gaddafi, for the first time since leaving his interviewer's chair, Larry King became the interviewee last night with his successor, Piers Morgan, and asked about the worst interview ever. King said it was, easily, Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi.
Well, what did you make of it?
Difficult. Difficult interview. You know, interviewing gives you a lot of one-liners. He made us wait 2 hours. We were taping, and we had done Chavez that day from Venezuela, and we had also done Ahmadinejad from Iran, so it was a full day. And now this was like 8 o'clock at night, and he didn't sit down till 10, and Fareed Zakaria was going after me. And but when they bring him in, two guys come in first, and they go, and now, brother leader. And brother leader didn't like the couch. So brother leader left, and we had to change the couch. I found him difficult, interesting, and a little, like his solution to the Mideast was a little weird.
Just a little weird.
Brother leader.
Brother leader, enter the room. Oh, sorry, I don't like that couch. Get me another one.
We just brought you the story here minutes ago, how Muammar Gaddafi is complaining that the monarch in England has been ruling for just as many years, and actually more years
nobody's
than he has.
Nobody's picking on the queen.
Nobody's picking on the queen, and... That was just, well, and he's actually blaming hallucinogenics.
I was just going to say, he's blaming hallucinogenics on all these protesters. Maybe he's taken a few himself.
You read my mind. On this same Larry King interview last night on Piers Morgan, early in the former evening, the former evening host Larry King's return to CNN, as the guest of his replacement, Piers Morgan, King created a little friction by calling Morgan out on whether his show is, quote, dangerous, as initially billed.
Were you being facetious when you said I was dangerous?
Well,
was that,
really.
Was that an attempt at British humor?
Let me ask you, how many of my shows have you watched?
About eight.
Oh, you have?
So I haven't seen you dangerous yet. I mean, I said you're capable, but what happens is, here's what I think. Supposing, all right, we're going to do four specials for CNN. First one's in April. Yeah. We're still working on them. But supposing I said, this first special will be the greatest special in the history of American television.
Mm-hmm.
The best. And dangerous. It's going to kill you,
but Larry,
this special.
Larry, I could hardly come in and undersell
me. I can't live up to that.
Yeah, but we couldn't come in and undersell me. I'm following a legend.
No, you don't understand.
You can't follow Sinatra in Vegas and say, by the way, I'm not very good. But this is going to be useless.
Why can't you just say, Piers Morgan, I'm coming. Watch me. Piers Morgan starts next Monday. What's wrong with that?
I suppose I've always oversold myself. I quite like doing that. It's quite funny.
But then it's disappointing when you don't.
Well, to you it is. It wasn't to me. I think it's been going quite well.
I'm uncomfortable.
I don't understand that.
How is that good TV?
Why would they?
I'm uncomfortable listening to that.
Yeah,
it's like Dad came back after he handed over the family business and starts,
spanked him in front of a million people.
Yeah, well, yeah, however many watchers CNN actually has at that particular time. I don't think it's close to a million. But anyway,
well,
I'm just
okay,
saying.
Okay, 15.
I've seen the ratings. I don't think they were close to a million. But anyway, that was just kind of icky.
Yeah, it was kind of icky. Yeah. Well, switching channels, MSNBC's Rachel Maddow sat down with Jay Leno of The Tonight Show, where she offered up the liberal position on what's happening in Wisconsin, and she said right-wingers are trying to take away people's rights.
The reason that they have left is because it is a reasonable demand, no matter how big your majority is, it is a reasonable demand to say, we want to renegotiate the contracts under which people who work for the state work. It is not a reasonable demand to say, you will never be negotiated with again, and we are taking away your rights.
Yeah.
For the government, I mean, it's kind of amazing. For the government to say, we, the government, know best. And you guys want to be in a union? We're taking away your rights to be in a union. We're taking away that choice from you. Mm-hmm. Because the government needs to do what it wants, and you guys are getting in the way. For the Tea Partiers to come in and say, you know what? Government does know best. The people ought to lose this right because government needs something here. When did that become a conservative idea? I mean, talk about a big government. To see the Tea Partiers here taking the side of the government taking away the people's rights, I think calls into question the whole idea of conservatism.
Well, I did watch a bit of that interview. You know, she claims that, you know, this is a policy agenda that Republicans are putting forth that's bigger than the issue of the budget, that it's being that the public is being misled about the real reason behind, you know.
Right. And Miss Maddow was actually misleading as well, because the government is not talking about taking away people's right to negotiate with their employer. In this case, happens to be the government. What they're talking about is collective negotiation as one big group. That's what they're talking about taking away. So I think she was being a little disingenuous there when she was saying the government wants to take away all your negotiating ability. America's Radio News continues next. Governor Mike Huckabee, he will be on this show. We're going to talk to him about some politics here in D.C. and politics around the country. Make sure you stay around for that interview.
And Space Shuttle Discovery poised to make its final flight ever today.
And Al-Qaeda backing the Libyan protesters. Those stories come your way and much, much more as America's Radio News continues. Remember, this is where the nation's news breaks.
From the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Coming to you live from Washington, D.C., this is America's Radio News. Get ready to get informed. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us. It's Thursday, February 24th. Here's what's happening.
When you raise your right hand and you look the people of Wisconsin or the country in the eye and say that you're going to uphold the Constitution and uphold your duties, and then the first time you have something that isn't going to go your way, you skedaddle like a little ninny out of the state. It is a dereliction of duty, and they should be removed from office. It's preposterous.
Democrats in Wisconsin remain AWOL as Republicans call it a dereliction of duty.
North and South, East and West, voices are being raised together to oppose suppression.
President Obama finally opens up about the atrocities in Libya.
They're very fragile, and by treating her aggressively, I'm not sure you're helping her.
One celebrity doctor says Lindsay Lohan should be treated gently.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
Lots of things to get to, lots of breaking news around the world. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us.
Let's get you to America's Radio Newsline, standing by there. Governor Mike Huckabee, the former Republican governor of Arkansas and the host of Huckabee on the Fox News Channel. He ran for the Republican nomination, as everybody remembers, back there in 2008. He also has a book called Simple Government, 12 Things We Really Need from Washington and a Trillion That We Don't. Governor, nice to have you back here on America's Radio News. And I say back because I actually interviewed you when you were on the campaign trail down in Dallas in 2008.
Well, Chris, I'll tell about it, so that's good for both of us.
There you go, sir. Hey, you know what? In your book title actually leads me right into what I wanted to ask you first off. You're talking about returning to a simple government. You've been a governor. You know how hard it is to balance the books. Here's what's going on, and we see what's going on with Governors Walker and Kasich and Scott down in Florida. Tell me how the lessons in your book can relate to what these governors are going through right now in their states.
I think it's very important for people to understand what these governors are doing, and it's not just Republicans. You've got Jerry Brown and Andrew Cuomo, in New York looking at the same thing. They have unsustainable expenses related to public employees. And it's not that anybody is against teachers or firemen or anybody else, but people are for fiscal sanity. And when public employees, and I talk about this in the book, that they're making 30% more in wages and 70% more in benefits, and the people who are paying it, the taxpayers, just can't keep doing it. So, interestingly, I think this is somewhat a validation of something I wrote about, and I wrote about it months ago, but it's on the front page of every paper. But I specifically, on page 35 of the book, talked about public employee unions and how we were facing a train wreck because of the growing cost that we could not sustain at the state level and the cities, for that matter.
Yeah, and Governor, I had the vice president of the NEA talking about these benefits and how the conservatives and the Republicans are growing a little tired of financing their political opposition and making the point that these teachers get salaries that are paid for by the taxpayer. Then these unions, compulsory unions, take these dues out of that taxpayer money and then support Democratic candidates. So and he said, well, his rationale was, hey, this is their money once it goes into their paycheck. Do you buy that explanation?
Well, a lot of the union people don't really want to support the candidates that the union picks. And I think the point is, if a person wants to join a union, that's great. They ought to have a right in the private sector. But in the public sector, government operates a monopoly. It's not like that you're bidding for the services and can say, well, your union is too expensive, we'll go to another one, or this company is too expensive. Government provides services for which there is no competition. Now, last election, well, the 2008 election cycle, Democrats gave $400 million to Democrats, $200 million just to President Obama. That's a whole lot of money. I don't think people ought to be so surprised that Republicans aren't really excited about the fact that if the unions elect Democrats and the Democrats turn around and grant the union members big benefits, and those big benefits are bankrupting states, it may not be a big surprise that Republicans want to rein it in, mostly for fiscal reasons. But I think it's honest to say there's some political issue here, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know that for sure. Well, Governor, you recently said, speaking of politics, you recently said Mitt Romney should explain his health plan in Massachusetts, which has many similarities to the national overhaul that President Obama championed, including requiring coverage and fines for those who don't have insurance. First of all, what does Mitt Romney need to clarify? And also, are the divisions between you and Mr. Romney as deep as they're being reported?
No, I think it's ridiculous. There was one article this week that said that I might run for president just so I could tick him off. And I'm thinking, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Okay.
You want to say, how big an idiot are you to think that a person would put himself and his family and his friends and all his supporters through an incredibly just grinding campaign because he didn't like somebody? That's just beyond laughable. So I just want to say, anybody who would write that stuff got up either totally hungover or absolutely in need of something to put on the paper with no facts to start with.
Maybe it was a slow news day.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that is beyond absurd.
So what does Mr. Romney need to clarify in your mind?
Well, I don't think it's a killer for him. And you know, I'm probably not the person he's going to lean to for political advice. But my point has been that I respect the fact that states ought to experiment with bold ideas. And for example, in the book, I talk about Justice Brandeis, who in 1932 specifically called the states the laboratories of government. This is where you try things. And if a state attempts to do something, whether it's education or health care, whatever it may be, and it works, well, then you can put it in the other states. But if it doesn't, then you haven't made a 50-state mistake. So the point that I'm making in all of this is that you had Massachusetts, and I mentioned Tennessee and TennCare. Those are states that have attempted to do essentially what Obamacare is. It didn't work. It created huge costs. The quality of medicine went down. Mm-hmm. It failed to do what it was intended to do. So rather than blame Mitt Romney, I think you should say, or he should say, look, I tried this. It didn't work like we thought it would.
Right.
But I stand by the fact that I tried something bold. That's what leaders do. I would be able to accept that as a very legitimate and fair answer.
We're talking with Governor Mike Huckabee. He has run for president. He's the former Republican governor of Arkansas, and he's the author of a book called A Simple Government, 12 Things We Really Need from Washington and a Trillion Things That We Don't. Sir, in that book, you referenced Islam as the antithesis of the gospel of Christ and said that Islam was receiving special accommodations that are, quote, un-American. Why don't you explain that and what you mean by that?
Well, if you put a nativity scene on a public square, the ACLU is going to shut you down and say you can't do it. And the courts will side with the ACLU. Can't sing a Christmas carol at a school. But the University of Michigan spends money out of the public treasury to accommodate a foot bath for Muslim students. Now, I can't get anyone to explain to me how that we can be a secular society when it comes to Christians, but we want to make sure we don't offend anybody of the Muslim faith. I'm not an Islamophobic, by the way. I don't dislike Muslims, and I do think that there is a big difference between the people of the Muslim faith who practice a version of Islam that is peaceful and frankly, very, I think, normal, and those who are jihadists who believe that we ought to implement Sharia law, that we ought to work toward a caliphate, and that there are no geographical boundaries, that those don't really mean anything. The only thing that means something is the establishment of the caliphate and implementing Sharia law for all, which is extremely destructive to women and to any sense of freedom. I don't know how anybody can see what jihadists do when they're willing to blow up their own children for the sake of their cause and say, yeah, that's okay. We're just going to kind of say that's just a different way of looking at life.
Now let's look forward for a minute. We're up against the clock. We don't have much time, but you recently said you believe President Obama, it'll be tough, but he's beatable. Are you the guy to do it? Are you the guy to beat him in 2012?
You know, I really believe, Lori, that I could, and if I didn't think that, I wouldn't even be considering running. It's not going to be easy, Interestingly, when I said that, a lot of people said, well, he's not going to run. He says nobody can beat Obama. And I never said that. I think he can be defeated. The electoral map really favors a Republican this next time. But what I'm trying to make Republicans understand is I don't care what the electoral map looks like, taking out an incumbent president who will start the race with $1 billion and will be able to concentrate for about 4 months in a campaign when Republicans are out there for 18 months battling each other for the opportunity to climb that billion-dollar mountain, that isn't going to be easy.
He is the author of A Simple Government, 12 Things That We Really Need from Washington and A Trillion Things That We Don't. Former governor of Arkansas, Governor Mike Huckabee, thanks a lot for being on America's Radio News.
Thanks
My
so much.
Pleasure. Thank you both.
Come back soon, sir. Coming up next, well, another guy that, well, has turned down the possibility of running in the 2012 election, Chris Christie. He's not running, but he has some advice for those who are. We'll give you that advice coming up next.
And Muammar Gaddafi supporters launch new attacks to crush the rebellion.
And Al-Qaeda backing the Libyan protesters. It's all coming your way on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news so you don't have to. If it breaks today, hear it today when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is the Real News Filter. We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't. This is America's Radio News.
22 minutes past the top of the hour. This is America's Radio News coming to you live from Washington, D.C. This is where the nation gets informed. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us. It's Thursday, February 24th. Well, Egyptian authorities have arrested the country's former information minister and the chairman of state TV and radio on corruption allegations, the latest moves by the country's ruling military against senior officials of Hosni Mubarak's ousted regime. Authorities also referred to trial two former cabinet members and a one-time top official of Mubarak's political party. They'll face corruption charges.
Al-Qaeda is backing the Libyan protesters. Al-Qaeda's North African wing condemned Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi and expressed solidarity with protesters revolting against his rule. Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb accused Gaddafi of hiring African mercenaries and ordering aircraft to fire on those protesters.
Well, Egyptian authorities, as I mentioned earlier, arrested several people in the minister's cabinet. But of Libya's embattled dictator, Muammar Gaddafi, gave a bizarre speech by phone today, Chris, to claim the revolt was the work of Osama bin Laden, that rebellious youth had been given hallucinogens. And get this, he complained that the Queen of England has ruled longer than him, and no one's asking her to step down.
Okay, back here at home in Madison, Wisconsin, assembly that is braced for a vote on a bill that would end collective bargaining, or at least most collective bargaining for public employees, while state police searched for Senate Democrats who remain outside of the state. Even as demonstrators continue to chant and sing their protest against Governor Scott Walker's plan to end most collective bargaining for state workers, lawmakers prepared to move on that bill. Move it along, rather, in the state legislature. Though the measure is expected to easily pass the Republican-controlled assembly, it also needs Senate approval.
Well, Space Shuttle Discovery poised to make its final flight into space at 4:50 p.m. Eastern. NASA says it's confident no hydrogen gas will leak and no cracks will develop in the fuel tank. Both of those problems cropped up during the initial countdown in November. Now, Discovery will head to the International Space Station with a crew of six, as well as a load of supplies and a humanoid robot.
Folks over at MSNBC gave free airtime yesterday to Marty Beal, the executive director of the Wisconsin AFSCME, to explain why people should get behind and join the labor movement.
Okay, I want you to make a point now. I'm going to give you free advertising. Take a minute and speak to the unorganized private sector employee out there making $30, $40 a year. You get somebody making an average income in this country, and maybe there are two people working, and maybe they're making a little more. Why should they organize? Why should they join the labor movement, if you will? if it still is a movement?
Because labor movements are all about dignity in the workplace, and these folks who don't have unions have no dignity in the workplace. They work at the beck and fancy of their employer, and maybe they have a decent salary, maybe not. Fringes, probably not. But the union brings dignity to the workplace, and that's what's very important. Protections and dignity in the workplace.
Well, Chris, you know, and yesterday there was big news out of Wisconsin. There was a prank phone call made to Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. He took the call who was actually a blogger for the Buffalo Beast, but it was portraying himself as a phony billionaire, David Koch, who makes a suggestion to Walker he says he actually considered.
What we were thinking about the crowds was planting some troublemakers.
You know, the only problem with the because we thought about that. The problem with, or my only gut reaction to that would be, right now, and the lawmakers I've talked to have just completely had it with them. The public is not really fond of this. My only fear would be is if there was a ruckus caused, that would scare the public into thinking maybe the governor's got to settle to avoid all these problems.
That's causing some headaches for the governor of Wisconsin for sure. Coming up on America's Radio News, we're going to talk to some more guests about what's happening out there in Wisconsin, plus Indiana lawmakers passing immigration curbs like Arizona. More on that coming your way as America's Radio News continues.
When we turn on the light, the insects run and hide. This is America's Radio News.
And we are coming to you live from the nation's capital. This is America's Radio News. This is where the nation comes to get informed. Glad you're on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us. It's Thursday, February 24th. Here's what's happening.
When you raise your right hand and you look the people of Wisconsin or the country in the eye and say that you're going to uphold the Constitution and uphold your duties, and then the first time you have something that isn't going to go your way, you skedaddle like a little ninny out of the state. It is a dereliction of duty, and they should be removed from office. It's preposterous.
Democrats in Wisconsin remain AWOL as Republicans call it a dereliction of duty.
North and South, East and West, voices are being raised together to oppose suppression.
President Obama finally opens up about the atrocities in Libya.
They're very fragile, and by treating her aggressively, I'm not sure you're helping her.
One celebrity doctor says Lindsay Lohan should be treated gently.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
Stocks taking a pounding for the third day as the unrest in Libya continues to melt down. As a matter of fact, oil prices really being hit hard. We're being told $119 to $120 a barrel in frantic trading overseas, really not having a positive effect as we're coming into the driving season here in Lori London.
That's right, Chris Salcedo, and it is still heating up in Libya. Thousands of mercenary and irregular forces are striking back at tightening circles of rebellions around the capital, Tripoli, trying to fend off the uprising against the 40-year rule of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, who today is blaming the violence on two things, hallucinogenic drugs and Osama bin Laden.
Back here at home, the Indiana Senate passed a sweeping immigration bill that echoes Arizona's tougher measures on illegal immigrants, and despite opposition from some of the largest employers and business groups in the state. The measure passed on Tuesday night by a vote of 31-18, and it would allow state and local police to ask a person stopped for infractions like traffic violations for proof of legal residency if the officer has a, quote, reasonable suspicion they may be in the country illegally.
Well, a Saudi Arabian citizen suspected of planning a terrorist attack using explosive chemicals has been arrested by the FBI. Khalid al-Dawasari, a 20-year-old college student near Lubbock, Texas, allegedly targeted the Dallas home of former President George W. Bush. He was arrested late Tuesday on a federal charge of attempted use of a weapon of mass destruction.
Let's get on over to America's Radio Newsline. Douglas Johnson is standing by. He is the legislative director for the National Right to Life Committee. Sir, welcome to America's Radio News.
It's good to be with you.
Hey, you know, recently the United States House of Representatives vote to pass an amendment that would strip Planned Parenthood of taxpayer government funding. How do you feel about that ruling, that decision?
We strongly support that action. It's called the Pence Amendment. It's really a landmark vote. We think it demonstrates that more and more lawmakers really recognize that Planned Parenthood has become a hyper-political, under-regulated and out-of-control mega-marketer of abortion. They are preoccupied with getting a bigger and bigger market share, you might say, of abortion, and they're already performing over 300,000 abortions a year in these Planned Parenthood clinics. It accounts for about one-third of their clinic income now.
Yeah, well, people that support Planned Parenthood would say these folks do worthwhile procedures. They actually help women with a lot of procedures that some of these in the poorer communities can't afford. Is that not worthy of taxpayer funding?
I assure you, these federal funds are all going to be spent. This Pence Amendment does not reduce the amount of money being made available for these types of programs. And there are thousands of community health centers and rural clinics and all sorts of different entities that will accept these funds to provide the services. What is different about Planned Parenthood is its obsession with promoting abortion as a method of birth control. And they have become more and more invested in that in their organization as each year has gone by. So that at this point they are the major abortion chain in the U.S. and also very, very heavily active politically in resisting any limitations on abortion, even parental notification laws and that sort of thing.
Well, sir, critics would say that no federal funding goes to any abortion at Planned Parenthood, and they say that 90% of what Planned Parenthood does is to provide affordable health care services such as pap smears, breast exams, and even contraception to these women that are low income. And they say defunding the group will hurt these women's ability to get care. They say one in five women have used Planned Parenthood's health care services at some time in their lives.
You know, this is very misleading, this 90% claim that they make. If you look at the money, you know, like they say in journalism school, follow the money. If you look at the money, it is a third or more of their clinic income now. We're talking about a $1.1 billion corporate entity. It's called nonprofit, but they are very well heeled. When their president left a few years ago, it was reported that her annual compensation was on the order of $1 million a year. So we're dealing here with a big franchise operation, which is getting about a third of its money from government sources and about a third from selling abortions. So abortion is not some marginal activity here. And we just don't think this is the sort of thing that the taxpayer should be sustaining.
Well, sir, some would also say that laws against abortion don't stop abortions. They simply make it less safe, and the number of women who get them wouldn't change necessarily. It would just being going from legal to illegal would just change. The only thing that would change is more women would die. And, of course, we do know that abortion is legal in this country.
Well, you know, there's abundant empirical evidence that the effect of Roe versus Wade and of removing the laws protecting unborn children was to multiply the number of abortions done in this country. You did not just replace illegal abortions with legal abortions, but greatly increase the overall number. And indeed, some of the data that demonstrates this has been collected by Planned Parenthood and by the Guttmacher Institute, which previously was an affiliate of Planned Parenthood. In fact, they complain that one of the effects of the federal policy against funding abortions, which has been in place for some years, is that there are now more than 1 million Americans who were born who would not have been born if the government had been funding abortion. Now, we think that's a great success. We think that we're glad that those million Americans are among us. The Guttmacher Institute has referred to this as a tragic result of the federal Hyde Amendment. So that's a difference in perspective.
We're talking to Douglas Johnson. He's the legislative director of the National Right to Life Committee. A couple things I wanted to ask you about, too, sir. The defunding of Planned Parenthood from the federal government, from taxpayer money, will not, in effect, shut down Planned Parenthood, number one. And number two, I wanted you to address, there are some folks on the conservative side that allege that Planned Parenthood targets minority communities in particular for their services. Can you address those two points?
Well, on the second point, we do have material on our website at nrlc.org, which is quite up to date, that goes into detail about their efforts to consolidate kind of mega marketing centers in some of the urban areas. These do seem to be centered often in minority communities. And so these concerns have been expressed in different parts of the country. It's true that cutting off the federal funds for Planned Parenthood is not going to put them out of business, but we think that if they're going to be this invested in the snuffing out of members of the human family through abortion, that this is not the kind of organization that the federal government should be sustaining the infrastructure of with hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars.
So is it fair to say, sir, that you're not advocating for the shutting down of Planned Parenthood? You just don't think that folks that disagree with their philosophy should be asked to pay through it through their taxpayer money?
Well, whether I advocate it or not, it's not going to happen because Congress cuts off the taxpayer dollars. They have other sources of funding.
Mm-hmm.
They have private donations, and, of course, they charge for their services. It's a matter of who pays the bill.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. We have been talking with Douglas Johnson. He's the legislative director for the National Right to Life Committee. Sir, make sure you keep us appraised of what's going on. We'll make sure you have you back on again, okay?
It's been a pleasure.
All right, America's Radio News continues. The Congressional Budget Office says the stimulus bill, well, it just got a lot more expensive. We'll explain coming up next.
And an Indiana state prosecutor is fired over inflammatory remarks regarding the Wisconsin union protesters.
And it's party time once again at the White House. We'll tell you what they're celebrating now at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. When we come back here on America's Radio News, this is where the nation's news breaks.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
When we turn on the light, the insects run and hide. This is America's Radio News.
This is where America comes to get informed. I'm Chris Salcedo, and this is America's Radio News.
And I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us. It's Thursday, February 24th. We are almost at the weekend. Well, Julian Assange can be extradited to Sweden in a sex crimes inquiry. A British judge has ruled that, rejecting claims by the WikiLeaks founder that he would not face a fair trial there. Assange's lawyer said he will appeal. Meanwhile, Judge Howard Riddle said the allegations of rape and sexual molestation by two women against Assange do meet the definition of extraditable offenses and said the Swedish warrant had been properly issued.
Congress's chief scorekeeper has again raised the cost estimate of President Obama's two-year-old economic stimulus program, calculated it will end up costing United States taxpayers $821 billion. That is $34 billion more than Mr. Obama had promised. And the economic boost from the added government spending is beginning to wear off as well, the nonpartisan CBO said in a report that was released yesterday. It said that in the final 3 months of 2010, the stimulus was paying to keep between 1.3 million and 3.5 million people in jobs, both down from the peak record in the prior three-month period.
Well, General Motors reporting its first full-year profit since 2004 as the automaker capped a tumultuous year that saw it emerge from bankruptcy as a dramatically smaller company with fewer employees, fewer brands, and considerably less debt thanks to a 2009 bailout by American taxpayers. Now, GM posted a $510 million profit in the fourth quarter as it continued an impressive comeback from bankruptcy.
And it's party time once again at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. The White House will celebrate Black History Month with a February 24th concert celebrating Detroit's best-known musical import. President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama will host the Motown Sound in performance at the White House, a tribute to the record company Berry Gordy Jr. founded in that part of town in Detroit. The concert will be filmed for broadcast at 8 o'clock March 1st on PBS.
That's awesome, Chris. How come I never get invited?
Me either. I'm looking. Hold on a second. No, my invite is not here. I thought
you
I
lost
had
it.
Yeah, I lost it.
I think the
What are you looking for? What are you looking
for? Crashers, White House crashers.
Ah, there you go. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican from Wisconsin, told Nia Cavuto of Fox News that Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker knows that the budget needs to be balanced, and he's going to do what he can to make sure that happens.
First of all, most states actually have a constitutional requirement to balance the budget, and that's what, you know, Governor Walker's up against. He must balance the budget, and he's facing a $3.6 billion deficit over the next 2 years. He has to balance that. And you know, the actions he's taking right now is only going to close $300 million of that gap. We have $3.3 billion left.
Maybe we should just have a balanced budget requirement federally to get people off the
debt. I'd be highly supportive of that as well. Yeah. Yes, we do need to put that overall spending cap. But, I mean, the issue in Wisconsin...
Why does it? I get it, Reed, Senator, when I look at Republicans. They're all over the map on how much they're going to cut.
I've heard over the weekend people referring to the $61 billion cut that's being proposed by the House as draconian cuts. I mean, you take a look at $61 billion divided by the, you know, $3.6 trillion we're spending. That's less than 2 cents on the dollar.
Hmm. Well, he makes a couple of good points there, Mr. Johnson. First off, he was talking about how governors don't have the ability to print money. They have to balance their budgets by law. And the, yeah, that's what, I have heard that word draconian being used so much in news copy. I've seen it being used by legislators from one side of the aisle. You know, and I've never heard it used in describing our national debt. $14.2 trillion in growing every day. Some would consider that draconian, I believe.
Absolutely. Or it will lead us back to the Middle Ages or the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
Well, after pirates killed four Americans earlier this week, some are wondering if the U.S. Navy can ever secure the high seas from the pirate threat. Now, retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who survived Black Hawk Down, is weighing in on this.
Well, I think we've had a defensive policy primarily. It's sort of like the way we treated terrorism in the 80s and 90s. We waited for something to happen and then we reacted. If we put the right priority on the intelligence collection against these pirates in Puntland or northern Somalia and took an aggressive position, which would have to be an international organization to do this, not just a U.S. operation,
right,
we could go after them in their bases and also destroy the ships that they're using as motherships.
Anything we can do, we need to get on. I mean, there are folks that are still out there right now on these pirate ships that are being held captive.
Were you telling us yesterday that 700 people or so are being held for ransom?
Yes, there are several hundred people still being held by pirates as we speak.
You know, I...
On about 30 different ships.
The most recent case, of course, these four Americans that were brutally killed. All they were doing is going over there to sail, and they brought Bibles with them to distribute around. I mean, these folks weren't hurting anyone. And to die at the hands of these pirates, I mean, something has to be done, for goodness sake. Well, in an interview with Sky News, Martin Sheen, the father of troubled actor Charlie Sheen and Charlie's brother Emilio Estevez, opened up for the first time about Charlie's substance abuse.
He's an extraordinary man, you know, and he's, if he had cancer, how would we treat him, you know? The disease of addiction is a form of cancer, and you have to have an equal measure of concern and love and lift them up, and so that's what we do for him.
It must be very hard in the industry you're in, though, living things in the public eye with everyone, like myself, asking questions, I guess. How do you cope with that as a family? Just pull together?
You just have
you
to
get used to it, yeah, though, too. You get a bit after 30 years, me,
yeah,
40-some
yeah.
years,
yeah.
you just
yeah.
sort of... You build up an immunity, I guess.
You realize that we're not all on the same journey all the time, yet we have to love that much more. We have to be that much more present.
And Lori London, LA Times, reporting Charlie Sheen headed back to work on Tuesday.
All right. Well, we wish him the best. An LA judge taking a pretty hard line against Lindsay Lohan. He said yesterday he will send her to jail if she accepts a plea deal from prosecutors to avoid trial for allegedly stealing a $2,500 necklace from an upscale jewelry store. Now, here's a little bit of what Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Keith Schwartz tersely told Lindsay Lohan yesterday.
Ms. Lohan, I've never met you before the last court appearance. You've never met me, to my knowledge. One of the things about me is I treat everybody the same. I don't care that you're Lindsay Lohan versus John Doe, Jane Doe. That doesn't affect me. What I look to in sentencing, if there is a resolution in my court, is what are the charges, what's the prior record, things of that nature. Now, in this particular case, there has been so much speculation in the press, all of the talking head attorneys who talk about what the judge is going to do, what Ms. Hawley's going to do, what Ms. Myers is going to do. Well, I'm just going to tell you, this case does involve jail time, period. If you plead in front of me, this case is resolved in front of me, you are going to jail.
And, of course, period. We will keep you up to date what's going on with Lindsay Lohan if she does see time. Coming up tomorrow on America's Radio News, we'll keep you up to date on the standoff between government and big labor.
And we will continue to watch the increasingly volatile situation in Libya.
For Lori London, I am Chris Salcedo. We'll see you back here for America's Radio News for a Friday. Take care.